This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world. Today on Dreamland, we are starting a process that we're going to hopefully continue over time. It is a strangest experience show. As you probably are aware, quite a few of the people who have come into my life have had fairly strange experiences, and we love to share those experiences. Can't say that I haven't had a few strange experiences myself. Have you had one that you'd like to share? If you're a subscriber to Unknown Country and have an experience you would like to share, drop me an email at whitley@strieber.com, and you might come on the show if you'd like. Now, you can come on anonymously or in person as you wish and tell about your ultra-high strangest experience. We're looking for the strangest, and we'll have one, a show like this, every month or so whenever we get in an ultra-high strangeness experience. Now, today, we are going to be talking to an ultra-high strangeness person who has ultra-high strangeness experiences out the wazoo, and his name is Steve Neal. He is the major domo of a great website oriented towards experiencers, a YouTube channel called Breaking the Silence. He is a master special effects artist. His distinguished career includes many different movies, and including the creation of Spock's ears that Leonard Nimoy wore so many years, and many editions of them, I'm sure. So I'd like to welcome Steve Neal to the show. Steve, it's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks, Willie. It's always fun to hang out with you.
Yeah, well, it's fun to hang out with you, too. We've been friends for a long time. Steve tricked me into thinking he was already my friend with a very clever email about 35 years ago. I'm kidding. He didn't do that. It wasn't like that.
Oh, you're starting already.
Yeah,
I got you here.
I am known among my friends to be a bit of a joker, and that is not a joke. So,
no, okay, it Steve. Is not a joke.
No. Okay, so tell us, first of all, tell me what you did to engage with me, because we've been friends now for a very lot of years, since I think 88, probably,
actually since around 93, 94.
Okay.
Yeah, in fact, one of the strangest experiences that I've ever had to this day was it was late one night, and it was about 1994, and I was working in my studio that was attached to my house up in Granada Hills. You'll remember that place.
Sure.
And I worked very late at night because that was what I did back then. I had been going to see Yvonne, and I've been exploring my own experience.
Now, when you say Yvonne, can you give
Yvonne
us
Smith.
Idea who that? Yeah,
Yvonne
who
Smith.
Is Yvonne Smith exactly?
Yvonne Smith, she was basically trained by Bud Hopkins, and she's a certified hypnotherapist who started the Close Encounters Research Organization, CERO. And she's been going strong ever since about 1994, right in there when I first joined her group and started doing illustrations for her. And to this day, CERO has grown, and she's still doing the work, and she networks with people all over the world. So she's amazing. And the work that she's done.
Okay, yeah, she is indeed. She's an extraordinary person, and very dedicated. And
yeah, she's
largely without any compensation, she's given her life to this. So,
yeah, none of us make a dime off this. I mean, that's really true.
No,
we really don't.
We don't.
We don't do that. We don't do this work because of that. It's because of the passion.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like, you know, my books and my other endeavors are what support my website and my subscribers, for whom I am extremely thankful. Without you, I could not do this.
Yes, and that goes for me too, because I have my subscribers and people support us.
Where can people find you if they'd like to subscribe to your work?
On YouTube at Breaking the Silence. There are other Breaking the Silences, but so when you do your search, just put in UFOs, Breaking the Silence, or I don't use the word alien abduction on the site because
No,
otherwise,
let's not use that word in this
no.
either, because otherwise the Wikipedia
Yeah.
lies will come up.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't do that, but you can find me on YouTube and well, Whitley, you know the site, so you could always put
Yeah,
up
of
a link.
course.
So,
All right,
but
don't you have
going,
Patreon as well?
no,
Okay.
but we have supporters on the channel that actually subscribe. There's also my Substack, and people, I don't ask them to subscribe for a paid subscription, but they do it anyway, and I'm really grateful for that because
Oh, that's wonderful.
they really like what we do, and it means a lot to them, and they look forward to it, and so that keeps me going
Well,
and married.
wonderful. Well, okay, let's get into now the,
Well,
gosh, well, wait a minute. I have to
I was
tell you
starting to
about,
tell the story.
well, I know you were, and you're going to get back to it in a minute.
Okay, sure.
But trust me, we are telling a story together, and we will do it a good job of it.
Okay.
Back a long time ago, Steve contacted me by email and or by a letter, maybe. I forget which. And we became friends, and he has been talking to me, narrating his experience ever since, and it is really extensive. And not only that, there are elements of it that bleed into other areas that I don't think we've even talked about, Steve. You come up in. You're very woven into the whole close encounter experience. Let me put it that way. So now let's, why don't you start telling your story, and we're going to get to the strangest of all of your experiences eventually. But tell us now. Let's get started. When did this start? Because it starts a long time ago with you.
Oh, you want to go back to the beginning of my experiences?
I think we need to go back to the beginning to set the stage. Then we'll move on to the
Okay.
strangest.
And your audience should be aware that we did a film together in 2017 that was about my experiences. That wasn't a documentary, it's an actual film that you introduced.
Yes.
That goes into a lot of detail. I did a book as well, but where it began was 3 o'clock in the morning in 1958 in San Francisco on 47th Avenue in my bedroom. I woke up to a vacuum of silence. It felt like a vacuum. I remember feeling like maybe I wouldn't be able to breathe, so I took a deep breath and I could breathe, and I could hear myself breathe, and I could feel my chest beating. But everything else, I mean, I was in San Francisco on 47th Avenue. Even at that time in the morning, it's a noisy city. Plus, there's the ocean that was only a few blocks away, Cliff House, where I could hear the seals, the buoys, the foghorns. There was nothing. And I looked over, and there were these little beams of light coming through my window, searching around onto the floor. I've never forgot this. I wasn't frightened. I was really curious. So I crawled out of bed, but I was being cautious, and I stayed against the wall that had the window where the lights are coming through, trying to stay hidden till I could get to the window. And when I peeked over the edge of the window, that's when the lights reacted to my presence, letting me know they knew whoever was behind the lights. Oh, there you are. That did scare me a lot, and I looked very quickly for a place to hide, and I went under my desk. I sat under the desk, hoping for it to pass, but it didn't. The lights kept looking around, and then they eventually came into the room. I mean, they were in the room, and they found me under the desk. And the last thing that I remembered was a figure, backlit, humanoid, very thin, big head. And next thing I knew, I woke up on my parents' rug in front of their bed, because I would go in there to sleep with them, as it would turn out, and they didn't want me doing that. So they had stopped me from doing that. And so I would sneak in there and curl up on the rug to feel safe, and then sneak back in the morning before they got up. That's where it began.
That's where it began. And when did you remember all of this?
Oh, I never forgot it. I mean, I remember that consciously. I didn't have to go under hypnosis or
Did you
anything.
ever talk to anyone about it when you were a child?
No, I wasn't supposed to.
You know, when I was a child, I had experiences, some with my father, and it was never referred to. And by the time I was 13 or 14, I had completely forgotten them. It's like my son's forgotten everything that happened to him and can't remember it. He's tried. He says it's like it just didn't exist. And I would have agreed with him before I had the communion experience. I would have said, alien, forget it. It's not, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so let's go on to your, we'll build a little bit toward this. This is a child, something that happened in your childhood. Did they then come into your life and,
What I learned through the evolution of my own experience in my life, and I'm 73 now, I'm younger than you. Not by much. And there was a lot of stuff I didn't share with Yvonne or anybody that I thought was just my childhood imagination. Because I had lots of memories about the fairy people, and I used to listen to my walls because I thought maybe they were inside the walls because I see them go through the walls. They were my friends. They took me up into the sky at night, and I played with other children, and I was on board with other beings that were childlike but not human. And I had these memories, but as you were referring to, by the time I was, 11, 12, 13, right around in there, I started getting older. I look back on those memories as just being dreams or a childhood imagination. Despite the fact that I was seeing UFOs yearly, monthly sometimes, I was always seeing them. I was also looking for them. I was always looking up to the sky, like that was some place I was supposed to go back to. But I never really connected the dots. And I thought that those were, so many kids have imaginary friends. And my family was a little broken. My dad left my mom when I was like 8 years old. And so you wonder if you weren't just doing something to try to protect yourself, to live in a fantasy world. That was until I read your book and started hearing also the communion letters and started hearing other people's stories. And that's when I realized there had to be a connection there. Because at that point in 86 or 87, right around in there, I was having some pretty dramatic UFO sightings with friends who were terrified. I had witnesses with me more than once, and it scared the hell out of them. It didn't scare me. I was just fascinated. I wanted to get as close to it as I possibly could. So after I read your book, I did write you a letter, but I'd never heard back. It might be in the archives. I also sent you a bust. That might even be in the archives. I don't know. But
No,
we
no.
met years, we met like in 93 or 4.
Yeah, we met then, and yeah, and it's been, and we've had our times as close friends and our times as not, and but
Yeah.
in any case, we've we've been on the journey together, and the thing that strikes me about your experience and always has is the incredible consistency. It's been there, and it really, you've been hypnotized from time to time by Yvonne, but you're not a really a person who, you have a lot of natural memory. One thing, folks, that also happens with Steve is that he attracts this visibly, and there's a video that we're going to run at the end of the show for our subscribers that Steve made with a Celestron telescope in 1993, I believe, in Camarillo, California, when every Thanksgiving for years, a UFO would show up there. And one year, Steve decides, I'm going to my cellist drawn out, and I'm going to video it. And it is going to surprise you. You will not be looking at anything like what you expect a flying saucer or so forth to be. What do you make of that video now, Steve?
Well, I Roger met me there that night, and Roger Lear was there when we filmed it. And what
Yeah,
I had to
Dr.
do,
Roger Lear was a he did implant research with me
yes,
and with others, and he was very devoted to this
and he was a good friend too.
and a good friend, exactly.
He was
Go
a
ahead.
very, very sweet guy. I had gone out there because he said, "Steve, you got to come out and see this thing." So I did, and I went out, and I just brought a pair of binoculars, and I figured they were seeing Venus or something like that because the way it was described, being kind of bluish and all that. So, but when I got out there and I saw it, and boy, did I see it! It was moving. So right away, I knew it wasn't Venus, and it wasn't a satellite. It was too big for that. And when I looked at it through binoculars, it looked like a hat. It looked like a flying sombrero glowing, and it had a dome on top and a classic saucer. I got pretty excited. I said, "Roger, I got to come back tomorrow. I'm going to take the Super 8 video cameras, which weren't very good back then, and make some kind of rig so I can hook it up, prime focus to the eyepiece on my Celestron 8-inch telescope." And I did that. I stayed up very late, rigged that all up, went back the next day and set up everything. And I had a monitor so people could see what I was seeing. And it was very difficult to track because when you have a 2000 millimeter lens zoomed in that tight on something, the tiniest little jarring makes it vibrate all over the place. But I tracked it very carefully, as best I could. And I got a pretty good video considering the conditions. But it didn't look like a saucer. It just looked like this sphere, and then it burst, and these smaller spheres came out of it. I really have no idea what it was.
It was really strange, and
It was really strange.
it was not of this world. It was not a balloon, and you can see that very carefully. I think that is the only non-professional video of a UFO ever taken through a telescope. I certainly have not heard of another one.
Huh. Well,
Have you?
I have a new
No.
telescope now. Mary got us a brand new Celestron. But the problem with it is it's a NextStar, and you program it to go to any object in the sky. So if you see a UFO, you can't pan towards it. But I did get a night scope that's color, quite expensive, and man, this thing really gets them. I've already got a couple, so
Well, that's extraordinary.
yeah, so we're on the hunt. Just
Yeah.
for the fun of it.
Okay, so let's move on
Sure.
into experiences. But before we do that, folks, we're going to take a brief break for our free Dreamlanders, and we'll be right back. We're talking to Steve Neal, his YouTube channel, Steve Neal Breaking the Silence. Beautiful material. Steve is a marvelous artist and animator. You can see behind him some examples of his work. The alien heads are classics. And is the did you do the owl that's back there?
No, the owl I got from my back lot on Unreal. The entire background is, although I did do an owl, the entire background is CGI, not AI, but CGI.
Oh, in other
So,
words, you're sitting somewhere other than where you look like you're sitting.
yeah.
Ah,
Well, I'm a
I
visual
never
effects.
guessed that. I thought you were in a room somewhere.
No.
That's really cool.
If you look, the sport model is, it's hovering and it has no visible means of support, so that
That's
should
right. Yeah, it doesn't.
be one giveaway.
Yeah. So you could flip a switch and we'd be seeing you in another space.
You'd see me in my living room because I'm not at the studio today.
I see. His
Yeah.
studio is a remarkable place, folks. It should be a tourist attraction, but don't think it, I think there'd be a little liability issue of people having things falling on them and so forth. But
Yeah.
he's been doing this for a long time, and Steve is one of the most talented special effects
Thank you,
artists
Whitley.
that I have ever known. And also you make wonderful models and radio controlled airplanes and things that are just so beautiful.
I'd be crazy if I didn't. I mean, it's just building radio control model airplanes, and I build them. I don't buy, prefabricated stuff, and I build scale planes and stuff, but it's great basket weaving. I mean, I'm doing this stuff 24/7 practically, as you are, and I need a break to get away from it and do something entirely different.
I used to be able to get away from it when I was in airplanes, but now they have Wi-Fi, so my phone keeps beeping anyway. But I'm glad, because if we weren't getting the kind of attention we get, this would be a real problem. Because what we do, the whole experience of community is about, is cushioning the shock of change, called ontological shock. And whenever I hear people say, "Oh, we're ready," I mean, why do we have to wait? We are not. They're absolutely not ready. They are not ready to live the way you and I live and the other experiencers. No way.
We live in two worlds at the same
Exactly.
time, and that's a
And
hard one.
one of the worlds is really weird, and the other world is got aliens in it.
Yeah, exactly. I was
So
gonna say it is really weird. It's almost like Man in the High Castle.
exactly. Well, I'm finding lately that their timeline is coming more and more to the surface in my life and in the lives of people who work with me. And that's interesting, because that was never the case in the past. It's like they're kind of really in a time crunch. And there's a couple of projects I'm working on that are important to them, and they come physically into these people's lives to assist in the working in working on these projects. It's quite amazing. It's never happened like that before. It has in my life, but not in the lives of people who work with me. So, do you find they're closer to you in your life, or less so lately?
More so, and what's happened recently within the last year or so is that I have I don't know, I think I finally accepted this is really happening, and I have really good reasons for that. And since I have I have more of a telepathic communication with them. When they want me to know something, I know it. And when they, like, for instance, 2 nights ago, I had something did happen. I knew it was going to, and it did happen. And I can go into that later, but I tried to remember what happened, and I could just see it, and then it pulled away from me. And then I heard them say, "Not now, but you will remember, but not right now." There's something along
That's
that lines, and I get a lot of this, and I get incredible. Last night I was laying in bed, and I closed my eyes, and I'm nowhere near asleep yet. And my God, the geometry, the beautiful things I was seeing with my eyes closed were just. I wanted to yell out to Mary, but she was already asleep, and it's just. Yeah, no drugs needed.
what I see are glowing strips of hieroglyphics, I would call them, although they're not in any way readable. They're not pictograms like Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Yeah, I can't read them.
They look more like incredibly complicated Chinese chops, actually, and hanging, glowing. And the other morning, they were hanging there, they weren't glowing. And I always thought that they were the light. And then I realized it's not that. There's something there physically. And then it sort of pulled away. And I'm thinking to myself, this is right at the edge of my reality, because what I've described now sounds very vague. And that's because I can't get it into words more clearly. As to what they mean, Steve, I think your guess is as good as mine, but I do think these things that we see mean something to us on the inside that we can't address directly, as they said to you, not yet.
Yeah, it's also like a gateway that's opening up, and they want to see if you're aware of the things they're sending in the
If they,
imagery.
if you can, if they're, you're on the right frequency, exactly.
Yeah.
I've concluded, they haven't said this to me, that frequencies are huge in this. That if you're on the wrong frequency, you're not going to see the world that they need you to see. And I think that's a big part of when they're coming and they do things to us, is trying to get us synced up. And I think it's very hard for them to do that. I think it's easy at all.
That's why meditation is so important.
Yeah, you do it too, of
I
course.
mean real meditation, not just sitting with your eyes closed being quiet. I mean, it's in meditation I found I thought I knew what it was until suddenly I felt myself becoming dislodged from my body, and I really felt it, and it was an incredible feeling, and to feel the real you,
Yeah.
and it just and it's opening up stuff. It's like having an ayahuasca experience without taking the ayahuasca.
Yeah,
And
that's exactly right. It's like what the doctors used to say to me, Whitley, you don't need to take any hallucinogenic drugs, you're generating them yourself. But at the same time, whatever happens to me is so powerful, it can and has on a number of occasions moved me into physical parallel universes. So it's pretty damn dramatic.
No doubt.
Getting back to the glowing the things we see. The one time I really saw, I was at the home of a friend in New York, lives in a high rise, and across the way there was another big high rise, and my bedroom window looked out on the other high rise. And I woke up in the night, and there were these huge streams of these hieroglyphics hanging down the entire side of the other high rise. It was just extraordinary. And I got out of bed, and I always am thinking to myself, it's in your head, it's in your head.
Yeah, that's
And
understandable.
it was still there. I was wide awake, so I picked up my phone and I took a picture. And I'll show that picture right now. Let me just make a note and of the where we are in terms of time. I took a picture, and I had hoped. I mean, it was clear. You could see in the camera, through the camera, that I could see them clearly. The picture is only the color of these things, but it was taken through the apartment window in the dead of the night, at 3 o'clock in the morning or something. So it proved at least that they were in some way in the physical world. So I'll show you the two pictures. One is the picture I took, a picture of the place, and then the picture of what it looked like when they were there. And it's quite dramatic. Okay, so let's go on. Gosh, this is, I hope you're enjoying this as much as I did. I asked you to talk about your strangest experience, and we have been teasing that enough, folks. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the strangest experience now, but first, for our free Dreamlanders, we're going to have a brief break. We're talking to Steve Neal. His YouTube channel, Steve Neal Breaking the Silence. Do go and enjoy the beautiful artistry of Steve Neal's work and the wonderful insights into the experience that he offers, unlike anyone else in the world. Okay, we have come, the rubber has met the road, Steve.
Okay.
Take it away.
Well, I was going to tell a funny one, but I know we do have only so much time, so but I'm going to tell you about a very serious one, and this one happened recently, and it disturbed me a great deal. It was so strange. It really was. And when you asked me that the other day, let's discuss one of the strangest things you ever happened. Well, they're all strange. But then this one really stuck out. I don't know about you, but every once in a while, I have this moment where I challenge them. I want to know this is real. I mean, despite everything I've seen, been through, witnesses, everything else, I need a refresh. I need a reboot or something along that lines. And so Mary, one night, wakes up, go to the bathroom, and she sees I'm not in bed. So she figures I'm in the bathroom. She goes into the bathroom. I'm not there. She goes out to the living room. I'm not there. She goes to the kitchen, all through the house, goes out to the back hobby room that I have, the garage, the courtyard. No Steve anywhere. And being who Mary is, she went to the bathroom and went back into the bedroom, and I'm still not there. And she was told to go back to sleep. Don't worry, he'll be back in the morning. Right? So she tells me this the next morning. And I was impressed. I know Mary doesn't make up jokes, or things like that. She was serious, but she was very nonchalant about it. And so it didn't make a big deal out of it. Still not convinced. 2 weeks later, I poke the bear again, and I get up to go to the bathroom at about 3 in the morning, and I look over and, oh, she's already in there, so I have to wait. So I waited, and nothing happened. So I got to go in the bathroom, and she wasn't in there. I looked all through the house the way she did for me. I couldn't find her. At this point, I'm starting to feel kind of panicked. I go back in the bedroom. I pull the covers back. I'm literally going like this on the covers, pushing down. What if she's invisible? I mean, it was just, I was desperate. And so I had to go really bad. So I go back into the bathroom to go to the bathroom. And as I'm doing that, I'm thinking, what's going to happen to me? If she doesn't come back, I'm screwed because they're going to think there's been hanky panky or something, and I certainly can't tell them what I think happened. And my heart was racing, and I go back into the bedroom, and there she is. And I swear to God, she was not in that bed. She was not in that bed. She was not in that bed. And it really shook me up, and I did not go back to sleep so easily. I was so glad she was there, but I was impressed. And I got this feeling inside, okay, you've had enough. And things have opened up even wider since then, but thankfully they've not done anything like that again. I mean, I tried to think of everything, like maybe I just thought she wasn't there. You know how your mind works. You're looking for a logical explanation, but I was absolutely left with none. And then the next day, I have this crystal that I carry with me all the time. The Buddhists talk about carrying a pebble. You use the pebble in meditation. And so I have this crystal that Mary bought me, and I carry it on me, and I sleep with it. And so that morning, I can't find it. I pull the covers completely back all the way. I'm looking all over. I looked on the floor. It's gone. And I get this sense that, no, don't worry about it. It'll come back. So I flip the covers back to make the bed, and I kid you not, it drops out of thin air straight onto the bed in front of me. So I'm done. I won't poke the bear again, and I won't question it. I at this point in my life, I have to accept that this is really happening. I feel like Roy Neary in Close Encounter. I just want to know this is really happening, and that's how
Yeah,
things.
you keep repeating that. We need when you get into, and you might think it's strange, folks, that this is a person that had this all his life, but we need reality testing constantly because this doesn't feel real. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I've had recently. There's There's a table in my living room that I call the slot now, because there's certain things I put down on it just disappear forever. And one of them was a little recording device called a Plaud, Plaud, and it's a little oval shaped thing. And there's been a considerable amount of resistance to my having hard to notice recording devices around here. And I hadn't thought of the Plaud in that way, but it was just, you couldn't tell whether it was on or off. And so I was sitting down, and what it does is records like conversations like this. I use it in recording Dreamland, and then it'll make you a nice outline and everything of what you've recorded. And it's used for meetings and stuff. So I was getting ready to record an edition of Dreamland, and I had just about to start recording it. I put it down on the table beside me, reached over to pick it up again a couple of minutes later as I was turning the show on. It was gone. Never saw it again. I had to buy a new one. But this time I didn't buy a little tiny one. I bought a big one. So it's not so easy. So it's not going to make anyone who doesn't want to be secretly recorded paranoid. And then the ultimate annoyance. Now, everyone's going to laugh and say, oh, he just lost it. But that is not the case. The reason I can assure you that that's not the case is I'm so careful with my TV remote, because as everyone knows, there's nothing more annoying than losing your remote. I have one place for it and one place only. That one of the last things I do before I go to bed is I check that place, and it's there or it's not. And if it's not, then I put it there. I did that about a week ago and came out the next morning to turn on the news, and it was gone. And I looked, I thought, you fool, you've screwed your own system up. And of course, I looked up hand and top, bottom, it was never recovered. So finally, this time I bought two. And I put one in my little home safe, and the other one I'm using. The one that was disappeared never came back. So, what do you think was happening that night? Do you think it was a time slip? You mentioned that earlier.
I thought about maybe they just made her. You know how they can get into your mind. You know how they can hypnotize you. They can very easily hypnotize you not to see something that's there. But I felt the bed. I pulled the covers back. So could they also do that? Maybe.
You know, this happened to me
Or
once.
maybe they, or maybe they took her.
Does she have any?
I didn't keep track of the time. It didn't occur to me to even look at the clock or do any of that.
She make I think of her as sort of like Anne, as someone who would never get taken. Anne was always there to keep me from falling apart.
They wanted me to know. That's the only way I can explain it, Whitley.
Was
I
it
just.
there a sense of threat about it, Steve?
No, it wasn't a threat. I asked for absolute proof from them that this is really happening, and
Well, they took Mary.
I know that what their intentions are, and I don't think that they would do that as a threat. They did it to just finally shut me up about it,
Yeah, well, I
because
wouldn't go
we
into it again, or they she's on
no no
end
no
up
no
on the
no
roof.
yeah It's kind of hard to move on with something if you're not really on board all the way, and I guess I wasn't. So, and what we're doing together, the visitors and myself, is very important, and it can't grow if I have any doubts about myself and about my own
Yeah.
experience and about them, because it's really easy to do, as you well know. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy to think
It
that this
feels
is
like
going.
it's something that's
Yeah,
not real.
it does.
Well,
And
it's
yeah,
like,
I've seen them face to face, and I never even believed that. And I was wide awake.
yeah. Well, you know, it reminds me of what happened with the inception of the book, The Fourth Mind. I had this bizarre experience of seeing them in the front yard wiping this material off of their arms, and I understood it was the way they evacuated waste. And when I told Bud Hopkins about it, he was so disgusted. He said, "That's absolutely impossible. That's your imagination, Whitley. Don't ruin your story by telling people crazy things like that." 40 years pass,
Yes.
and the Reddit document comes out
Yes.
describing the exact same thing, and I've never told another soul. And Bud never wrote about it. I never wrote about it. And I thought to myself at the time, how much else that I thought was imaginary wasn't.
Yes. Like little fairy people coming and taking you in the night as a child to go play with other kids up in the stars.
Yeah.
That was real. I mean, because what happened to me with Mary was real, then that was real. And it just makes you feel damn odd. If you didn't feel odd enough, back when you read, when people watching this show read Communion and you realized that you were part of this somehow, if it didn't feel odd enough then, all these years
I
later,
felt
it feels just as odd, if not even more so, when someone you love has completely disappeared from your house. She's nowhere. And then she's back again in an instant. And so you doubt your sanity right then and there. Was I just blind or something for a second? Was she there all along? And not twice in a row, not with me and then with her, so.
I remember what happened to my son that night when he was had an experience, and I he'd been wasn't in the bed, and I was so frantic, and somehow or another he ended up back in the bed, and I never was able to figure out how it happened, and I was left wondering whether or not it did happen, just the same with you. And you know, how are we going to live with this if this becomes a more public experience and more people? This starts to happen to more people. How are we going to live with this in this way when there's somebody who can stitch together and restitch and change your entire experience of reality like we would paint a picture? What is that going to be like to live like that?
Well, we're living it right now.
That's well said. Well said.
And I get the feeling that I know we're not so much different from them. I mean, when we're not in these bodies, we're an energy field, we're spirit, we're the soul, and so are they. And
Yeah.
once, and you know, if we really connect with that, it's going to seem like it's getting even weirder, but it really is a natural state. It's just not natural to us here on Earth in this physical form, but it's about to become that way. Because
Yes.
I think the visitors, they live in both worlds, and we're learning to live in both worlds. And I think the rest of humanity has to do the same thing. And as your book points out in The Fourth Mind, I think we were already there before the Younger Dryas. I really do. If you look at the history, and I know you
Oh,
have,
yeah.
of the indigenous people of this planet, people came from the stars all the time and they mingled and talked to them, and there was no fear and there was no aggression. But
And
something
then we
happened.
got knocked on our ass, and by
That's it.
either by a war or by nature, we don't know which.
We don't know which.
I hope it was natural and not a war, because if it was a war, we lost and we're still in trouble.
Yeah.
Steve, I'm gonna what I'd like to do before we finish, and for the subscribers afterwards, I'm gonna play the video, and then I'm going to do a meditation. Steve mentioned the importance of that, and it's been a while since I did the sensing exercise with my subscribers, so I'll do that as well. But before we say goodbye, what I would like to do is tell us the funny story, because this has been a pretty heavy duty dreamland, and And you talk about high strangeness. I mean, that really was out there. What about the funny high strangeness story?
Well, as I was starting to talk about, I'm in my lab, like some mad scientist, making gray aliens for the television program Sightings. I think many of you will remember the TV program. It was actually a very good program, and those were great people to work with. And I was making grays. I was making the tall ones and the small ones, and my phone rang, and I picked it up, and this man said, "This is Whitley Strieber." And I said, "Oh, come on." Because I thought my friends were pulling a joke on me, and then he said, "This is Whitley Strieber." He got very indignant. And there you were, and we've been talking ever since.
Great story, Steve, and thank you so very much for being with us on
Thank
Dreamland.
you,
And
Whitley.
folks, go to Breaking the Si Steve Neal's Breaking the Silence on YouTube. It is very worthwhile, and it's absolutely beautiful and gentle and heartfelt. And it is, the artwork in the animation is just exquisite.
And we do
It
films
will
too.
raise your frequency. Put it that way.
That's the idea. Thanks, Whitley.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, folks, I'm going to go through the exercise. Many of you who have been with me have done this with me before. And let me tell you a little bit about the history of it. The exercise, I started doing it in the Gurdjieff Foundation many, many years ago, back in 1969. And in 1980, five, the visitors showed up in my life. Then they later said to me, one of them said to me in my head, when I asked how why they came, because they said we saw a light, and I thought that they meant the lights of cities and things, but that's not what they meant. They meant this other light that shines when we do this. This is a way of exercising the attention. Our attentions are not exercised. They're very weak. They go out to whatever is outside of us that is calling to us. In other words, someone talks to you, your attention goes there. Someone blows off a firecracker, your attention goes there. A car goes down the street that you think is beautiful, your attention goes there. And so on and so forth. You're walking down a morning, having a morning walk, you see some beautiful flowers, your attention goes there. That's all fine. That's the way we live. We have to live that way. But there's another deeper way that we can't do all the time, but we can do some of the time, which is to take control of our attention and to place part of our attention on our body while letting our mind flow on its own. This takes us just a millimeter out of ego, out of the talking, the inner talking that's going on. And it places our attention on our body. Apparently, the light they see is the light of a person doing this. And what they'd like that they talked about that night was basically, I was doing this in those days every night about 11, and when I did it out in the country, they noticed it, and they could see this light come on about 11 o'clock every night, and they eventually came to investigate. That's how I got the rest of my life started. That was one thing. I drew them to me, and two was, I said basically by going out in the woods in the middle of the night, "Yeah, I am definitely as crazy as you suspected. I do want more." And okay, so let's do the exercise together with all of this in mind. Now, understand this is not about stopping thought. We really can't do that. Maybe a Zen master can stop thought for a length of time. I don't know. But what we can do is let our thoughts flow on their own. We have to just say it's okay to our thoughts. I'm not losing you. I'm not failing to notice you. I'm just doing something else with part of my attention right now. So we go now, you close your eyes with me, if you will. We go now to our left foot. We concentrate our attention as best we can on the way that foot feels. We move up to the lower leg, the upper leg and hip, and now we concentrate on the whole left leg. Now we move to the left hand and forearm, the left elbow and upper arm, the whole left arm. Now we return our attention also to the left leg, so we're paying attention to the left arm and left leg. Now we leave them and move to the right foot, the right lower leg, to the right knee and upper leg and hip, and the whole right leg. Now the right hand, forearm and upper arm, and the whole right arm. Now we bring in the right leg again, and the left leg and arm. So we're concentrating our attention on our arms and legs. Now we move to the base of the body and we move up our spine, up to the lower back, middle back, upper back, the whole back. Now we move up to our head, to our neck, to our whole head. We sense our head, pay attention to the way it feels, not to our thoughts, but to the actual head itself. Now we move down to our abdomen and solar plexus, and we concentrate on our solar plexus. Concentrate completely on it. And now we move our attention into our left leg, our right leg, our whole torso and head, and both arms. So now we're paying attention to ourselves and also listening to Whitley's voice, and I'm speaking. Our attention is split into two parts. You can do this exercise anytime you want to, anywhere you want to. Just don't overdo it. It's a wonderful exercise. Now let's move on. I think it's time for Steve Neal's fascinating video, and it's pretty low res. It was taken a long time ago, back in the 1990s. It's a fascinating little video, and the answer to the question of what was it is no, but we don't know. We checked into whether or not it might be a balloon of some kind, and that is possible. But if you look closely, you'll see it's being propelled by something above it. That's attached to it by a cable and spewing out some kind of fumes. So it's if it's a military balloon, it's not one that we have or understand. In any case, here it is, and I'm not going to come back afterwards. I'm just going to say goodbye and good night now, and all best with all of you.
My name is Steve Neal, and I've worked in motion picture effects and miniature work and creatures and monsters and all that kind of stuff for about 35 years. In all this time, I have done all kinds of stuff, from Ghostbusters to Mr. Spock's ears. And today, I still continue doing the same work at my studio in Ventura County. A number of years ago, I met Roger Lear, and Roger started telling me about this UFO that was seen in Camarillo, California, which is really only about 20 minutes from here where I work and live now. The first night that I went out to see it, I took out just a pair of binoculars because I was told that it repeated. It showed up almost every night during this period of like late September or maybe late October through November, right around in that time. So I knew I had more opportunity to go see it. So I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't a satellite or possibly one of the major planets that are seen near the horizon near sunset. When I arrived out there, I had a pair of binoculars, and I looked at the object, which was definitely moving across the sky. It had an arc welder sort of blue color to it. It was quite beautiful, almost like some of the blue LEDs you see today. And I looked at it through binoculars, and I saw a classic saucer of sorts. You know, it had like this dome and a saucer. And I said, well, gee, what do you know? It's not a satellite, and it's not something of ours that I could identify. So, being very excited, I went back that night and I rigged up a special camera rig on my Celestron C8. Now, I've been an amateur astronomer for a number of years, and back in those days in the 70s, we didn't have all the fancy equipment that we have now when I bought the telescope. And so, we move forward, we're in 1998 in Camarillo, and still, my Celestron, a basic clock drive and an off-axis guiding star system for doing deep sky photography. I had no means to hook a camera to it. So what I did was make a very quick camera mount, just basic enough to do a prime focus method of attaching a high 8 camera, 8mm camera, so that it looked into a 40mm eyepiece, which looked to the telescope. Now, there are a lot of drawbacks to doing it this way, but it was the quickest thing I could come up with, because the camera mount will kind of vibrate a bit, and when you are using such extreme magnification as we were with a 2,000mm lens, the slightest bit of movement causes it to wiggle. But I was able to get enough footage of it to and steady it enough that we could really get a good look at this unusual object.
Okay, here is the actual Celestron from the day that I used that night. What I was able to do was use this finder scope right here to get it initially inside the telescope. Now, the object was moving very quickly. To the unaided eye, the object
didn't move so quickly. It kind of tracked about this slope to the sky. Okay? So, but to
this set at, you know, it's a 2,000mm, 8-inch F10 mirror, so, and catadioptric system. So when you're magnified that much on something far away, the slightest bit of tapping on this will cause the wiggle that you see. You'll also notice that I have these control tabs here. And what these tabs allow me to do is lock the scope in and to the clock drive unit, which is here. And then this gets mounted to an equatorial mount, which gets attached to the tripod. And this is what allows me to do fine adjustments, as well as this will allow me to do fine adjustments this way. So when I move this here, it moves the telescope. Now, here is the old original mount. And this is the very mount that I made. It's still on the scope, which amazes me, because this has been put away for a while. I hadn't had much time for astrophotography lately, or even stargazing. I've been so busy in the studio. But the 8mm camera was attached to this, and the lens, at what we call prime focus, was aimed into this eyepiece. And you can see this is the original 40mm Kellner eyepiece, which is a 1.4 millimeter lens. And of course, you know, this is the reflector that goes into the, looks into this tube, which looks up into here, and so basically what happens is the image comes into this light bucket, this large mirror. It's collected back there. It's reflected to this smaller mirror here, which is in turn reflected back to this mirror in here, and then up to the eyepiece, effectively making the scope twice the length you see here. So, and that's how I did it. Now, I had a CRT hooked up to this telescope, and the CRT allowed myself and everyone there to watch the object on the screen, because you couldn't look to the eyepiece because the camera was looking through the eyepiece. So it was a pretty clumsy, crude system, and I had to fumble with the controls constantly to keep it in frame. But that, in fact, is how I got this imagery back in 1998.
So here at my editing bay, which is running Adobe Premiere and a lot of other software, as you can see, this is a really nice setup that we have here. And I'm going to take the footage, the raw footage, and edit it and smooth it out. In other words, I'm going to remove out some of the really shaky stuff, but leave all the clean footage in, and you'll be able to hear the comments in the background. Additionally, we're going to take a look at the stabilized footage first that Whitley had stabilized and sent to me so that you could see the big event. Because what happens here and what you are seeing is a large round object that appears to be gaseous with an extended like beam of light with little sparkles, bright energy sources at the end of it. And it is doing a pendulum motion back and forth. It's shaking, I know, but if you look carefully, you'll see that it's doing this. It's very dramatic, and then the light beam retracts and extends over and over again, eventually ending up in this very dramatic explosion, which is what the stabilized footage shows more clearly because the camera is shaking and this keeps it pretty straight. What we saw after that, it doesn't show up well on the video, is these little objects coming out. And they kind of fly away. After the objects flew away, that was the end of the event. We watched it as much as we could, and it finally faded away. At least that's what I remember. It was a while back. So let's take a look at the stabilized footage that Whitley sent.
There it is. There's another one coming out of it. See that?
Yeah,
It's
right.
shooting other ones out.
Isn't that something? I think I mean.
Why is it wiggling like that?
Because it's where it's such incredibly high magnification. Look, there's some kind of trail coming out of it.
Yes.
Still got the other
Oh,
piece
yeah.
coming out
Oh,
the
it's
side.
formed.
Look, it's turning. What the heck? It's turning. It's rotating. There's another one going around it with a.
Yeah.
Look at that. What is that?
Hey, you know, that's strange, isn't it?
It's going around in a circle. I mean, we're really close to this thing.
I wonder if it's a beam.
It's going back and forth. Look at
it
that.
It looks to me almost like a beam they're sending out. A beam testing the atmosphere. Who knows?
Well, I'll tell you guys, I've never seen anything like this. In all my days of.
Okay, we got you fixed up pretty good tonight, haven't we?
Yeah, pretty good.
Okay.
It keeps going more into focus. You see that? So whatever it is,
it's coming in.
It's coming in closer. Now it's going further away. It's stretching out. Now it's gone back in again. Now it's out again.
That is strange, isn't
it?
It's like a scanning around with that thing.
You can see there's like a hole in the middle of it.
Well, that's something you see we could never see before with binoculars. Or
no, you couldn't see that with binoculars. This is
very
interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Happening here.
Hi guys.
I'm glad that you're able to
I did a lot of practicing last night. It's paying off. That goes back the other way. You see that?
Yeah, it goes back and forth like a metronome or something.
It almost looks to me like a
scanning. Back the other way again.
There, you know. It looks like it's scanning a cloud.
Oh yeah, it is.
That's kind of made up my mind about building a mount.
Yeah, you're better off paying for a real good design one, real quality, you know.
It hasn't done its thing yet.
Take a 2.5-inch.
Look at that! Look at that! Look at that!
And inside, yeah. Clamp it.
There it is.
So there. And then I've got on the bench in the shop. I don't know if you saw that big ball bearing. Mm-hmm.
I could just get it more in focus.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't want to lose it that. Every time I go to get it focused more, that's when I'm going to lose it.
The yew tree, that branch there, look where it is now. Really moving.
Finally. Well, it isn't easy to keep this darn thing in the lead.
It's not easy, but. You get a view there that you'd never get.
I don't think so.
Otherwise. Right. That Celestron 8 is a beautiful scope.
You're doing a good job. This all looks pretty solid. I'm just wondering where the jitter is.
It's the magnification.
We're
magnified so high that if you sneezed...
Car's going on a... down. Oh, hey, terrific.
Oh man, terrific.
You're it's getting closer, you guys. You can tell by the focus.
Yeah. Well, now it's away again. A little bit. At least for a while it came.
Isn't it wonderful?
Yeah, talk about something worth someone.
Whoa.
You better have it. You should be able to still see it.
Ah, shoot.
Can't you see
it?
They turned off the light.
It left a contrast.
Yeah, oh, there we are. There we are.
You just had something there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, it's two.
Yeah, it's broken to two. Now you can see those pieces are changing attitude to each other.
It still has that streak.
I don't know.
What?
No, there it is.
Yeah.
It's going up.
It's still in two pieces.
It's going behind those trees. That's the problem.
Oh, I see.
So, that was pretty remarkable stuff. In fact, it was a trip down memory lane for me because it's been a long time since I've looked at this footage in any kind of detail. Having to edit it here on the system really, really made me take a closer look at it. And one of the things that I recalled is, yes, it did go behind the trees, which made it difficult to see. So it was descending down after it had come up, I suppose, because the trees were on this horizon over here, which was the southwest, the northwest, I believe. But it was just remarkable to look at it. I have no idea what we're looking at here. I don't think it's a natural phenomenon, and I don't think it's something of ours that belongs to our technology. It does seem to be intelligently controlled because of the pendulum action and the events that take place. After the explosion and the gas is dispelled, there are solid objects inside. They're difficult to tell what their exact shape is, but you can still see the little energy beam coming out of the larger one and aiming up towards that bright hot spot that's on the very end, like almost like fairy dust. It was pretty neat, pretty amazing. So I hope you all enjoyed watching this video as much as I did. It was quite a night that night back in 1998, and I'll never forget it. Thanks so much for watching. See you again sometime.
Thank you for listening. Dreamland is brought to you by Unknown Country and its family of subscribers. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our site coordinator is Amy Safrankova. The founder of UnknownCountry.com is Ann Strieber. I'm Whitley Strieber, your host for Dreamland.